we can get started.
Okay.
All right. So I actually partially know the answer to our first question already, because you and I talked about this when you were talking to me as a constituent. But could you describe sort of your own personal transportation diet? How do you get around? And sort of what decisions go into making, oh, I'm going to use this versus this mode of transportation for, you know, whatever trip it is.
Yeah, yeah. So I use a blend of different transportation alternatives, and it really sort of depends what my day involves. And things obviously changed a bit with the pandemic. So, you know, I live in Venice, mm-hmm. and I work downtown. And certainly on most days when I was going from Venice to downtown, I would drive. And I am very proud to have an EV. And that has been really life-changing for me. Really love having that. Really excited about the opportunity to build out the infrastructure around our city so that more people have the ability to get into emission-free vehicles. I don't have a charger at home, so I am completely dependent on public charging stations. So oftentimes I'm driving to downtown. However, I bought an electric bike in 2017, and that has been my primary means of transportation locally. So when I'm, you know, on the weekends around home in Venice, I more often than not am using my bike. However, I can't get everywhere on my bike. It just, there are places that I'm not comfortable riding, and an example of that would be on Lincoln Boulevard. So I take different routes around, but I stick to, you know, Venice and Playa del Rey, and so I use my bike for that. Professionally, prior to the pandemic, I was traveling around California quite a bit. I have clients all over the state, and so if I was going to San Diego or Orange County, I would use the train. And then oftentimes for meetings within downtown LA, I would use a bus to get around in downtown.
I'll tell you, there's nothing quite like that train ride down to San Diego.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely beautiful. And one of the things that I like about it are some of the amenities on the train, right? I can jump onto Wi-Fi mm-hmm. and do work. There are things about it that I preferred over the drive. So I would do that as often as possible.
No, I agree. I just sort of mumbled that. I don't know if it got caught on the audio, but no, I agree. I used to go down to San Diego when I was trying to build up Streets Blog California. That train trip was really something else.
Yeah.
And the access to bike share right at the station down there, which they had before. We have that now too,
yeah.
but we didn't when I was doing it 9-10 years ago. It was something else.
And when I travel, depending on where I am and what is on my menu for the day, I do use bike share quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's something that we started doing when traveling some years back, and I just find it to be oftentimes a convenient, fun way to get around a community and to see it.
That's great. So it sounds like you've already have in your mind that there's lots of alternative to driving, and you try to while you're not anti-car, you don't use it when you don't have the don't sort of have to almost and have the EV option.
Yeah.
But how do we make it so that more people feel comfortable doing that? I mean, EVs are one thing, and I think, you know, we're just going to see that as teleportation, as transportation gets more advanced. But what about the rest of it? What about transit and bicycling? How do we yeah. encourage more of that?
Yeah. So there's a lot of factors that are going to go into getting people to make that shift. And I certainly think that providing as many opportunities to encourage people to get out of cars is important. Efficiency, connectivity, speed, and safety
mm-hmm.
are all things that immediately come to mind around other modes of transportation. I think that some of these investments that we are making in mass transit are really important. I am really excited about the Sepulveda Rail Corridor,
mm-hmm.
although I think for me personally, it is really important that it go all the way to UCLA or to LAX and mm-hmm. have the extension to UCLA. It seems ridiculous to me to do all of that without those connectivity points to it. So making it available, making it interconnected so that it is easy to get to the places that people are going, making it efficient so that, you know, you're not losing time by taking mass transit are some of the issues for rail and metro. You know, for the buses, really sort of the same thing in terms of, you know, reliability and them being as efficient as other modes. And I think for folks to make a switch to using bikes more, providing routes in an interconnected system that's actually safe for them is important.
Sort of on that, that's a smooth transition for me. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but there's plans to take the Venice Boulevard bike lane, the 0.8 miles now, and extend it like 5 miles more. No, the final plan's not out yet, and they're doing an outreach event, I guess, in a couple weeks.
Yeah, at the end of August, I think.
Yeah, I think it's literally the last day, if I remember correctly, but yes.
Yeah.
But do you have any thoughts about that plan, where they are in the process now, or what they should be looking at as far as a final plan?
Yeah, so I haven't had an opportunity to dive into the details. I mean, I've just generally seen a couple of things about where it's going to be extended. My biggest concern about it, frankly, is the lack of community engagement and involvement around it. Mm-hmm. This is going to come as no surprise to you when I point out how controversial.
I read something about it once.
In the community, the Mar Vista Road Diet was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, constituents were angry enough that it led to an initial recall effort against the council member. And I have certainly heard frequently over the last year plus that I've been campaigning from folks in the area, remaining concerns about it, the impact on local businesses, the cut through traffic in the residential neighborhoods, traffic generally, you know, the idling of course isn't great for air quality issues. So there have been concerns about it. And I think at the heart of all of that was the lack of engagement and input from the community and a pervasive sense that this was something that not only was intended to be a pilot program, but imposed without much input from the community. What I'm hearing currently about the plans to extend it and or make it permanent is similar. And yes, there is a meeting coming up at the end of the month.
A meeting, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at the MVCC Transportation Committee meeting where DOT presented on it, but I was only there because I was presenting after that on Slow Streets in Mar Vista. And so, like, I mean, I'm streets blog, so I've seen a fair amount.
You pay attention to it.
Right, that's something.
But the vast majority of people in the neighborhood probably have no idea that there is, you know, even discussion happening around this.
Around it, yeah. And it's around the repaving too, as I understand it. Yeah. But again, I only saw that one. Joe wrote about it on Monday for Streets blog, but it's not something I've seen a lot on. I think the timeline for it's pretty aggressive though.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that there is going to be a lot of community pushback around it. And I don't know that that is the best way to get the buy-in from the community that I think would be important to help set it up to be successful.
Yeah.
And I also think that there are some things to be learned from the design that's there now. You know, there are challenges that businesses have had that, you know, neighbors have had. There have been serious concerns raised by fire department over accessibility. Now, obviously, when the pandemic happened, traffic reduced significantly.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different. Even now, we're still not quite back to pre-pandemic levels of traffic. It's a little bit better now, but at some point, we're all going to be back out in the world and things will resume, hopefully, to pre-pandemic levels. And so I think as there are discussions happening about extending the project, if that in fact is going to happen, looking back at lessons learned, talking about are there design elements or approaches to this that could be made or considered that are mindful of all the interests at stake, both the safety of, you know, folks who are riding their bikes, pedestrians, the ability of fire trucks to get through, the impact on businesses and neighborhoods. So I'd like to see more of that before it became permanent.
And that sort of leads into, and I actually didn't ask Aaron about this morning, so I made a note that I was, you saw me typing, was to follow up with him on this, is the Safe and Healthy Streets Initiative, the ballot measure that would basically say the city is going to implement its mobility plan on streets as they do repaving. So in short, what that means, if someone's listening and not familiar, is if you have a street right now, let's say is four lanes of mixed traffic, i.e. mostly car traffic, but in the mobility plan it says it's going to be two lanes plus a center turn lane plus two bike lanes, is that when they repave that street, that's what it'll, they'll re-stripe it automatically to follow the mobility plan. That's just an example. Doesn't have to be a road diet or something, but that's right. Just one I think easy people. Do you, so they have, the people that did that ballot measure got it, got enough signatures to get it on the ballot. It's not going to be on the fall ballot. It's going to be on
March.
For some future ballot.
March 2024, probably.
Yeah, unless there's something before that, like if, you know, there's a state election between now and then, you know, Newsom's elected president or something. so yes, but probably March 2024. Do you have any thoughts on the measure, pro or con, or it's so far in the future that it's not something you're worried about?
Well, I think that there is some pause for me because I would want to ensure that these approaches are appropriate for the locations where they may be going. And thinking about what is the flow of traffic in that area, and how other communities may be impacted by it. I am all in favor of, you know, creating protected bike lanes and making safe, healthy streets, 100%. Let me give you an example of where I have pause. So like on Lincoln Fast Forward Project, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with that one. The bikes sharing the bus lane makes me nervous. As someone who rides my bike, I'm not totally sure I want to share it with the dedicated bus lane. Does that mean if I'm riding in front of the bus has to go at my speed? And if the point is to get the buses traveling faster through that section of Lincoln, are we achieving that with that particular design? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Those lanes are going to be narrowed. And so if you're having a bus and a bike sharing that same lane and it's not protected for the bikes, I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think that's I don't know if it's a state law or a city law, but the shared bus bike lane, unless it's designated differently, is a law that's on the books, and I should know whether it's a state or city law. I remember that because it was there was one of the early streets blog like coverage things was the city started putting up bike okay signs on bus lanes. So it was bus only, bike okay is what the sign said.
Yeah.
And so, but a lot of enforcement at the time missed the bike okay because it was literally an afterthought. Yeah. And it was, no, the lanes weren't designed for that, but it was better than biking in mixed use traffic. And so I know it's,
could be.
Yeah. I know it's a rule from somewhere. I can't remember if it's a city rule or a state rule, but yeah. that exists out there.
So it's just a question that I'm asking,
yeah.
you know, and then I think also every community may be a little bit different. Right. And so mm-hmm. I do think that a consistency in the way that we approach this is important. And I do think that building these types of plans in as we do just general repair and repaving makes sense to kind of knock things right. out all at once rather than doing it in piecemeal fashion. That said, I'm not totally convinced that doing it as a matter of course on every street across the entire city without assessing the impact on a particular community, whether that's traffic impact on businesses, neighborhoods, really evaluating safety, ability of emergency vehicles to get through, particularly in peak traffic times. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if some additional scrutiny and nuance may be important. And here's another example. So when the road diet went in on Vista Del Mar, mm-hmm. I don't think anybody anticipated the traffic concern.
No, I think a lot of people were caught off guard by what happened down there.
Yeah, and so I just, you know, if we're just going to say as a matter of course, this is what we are doing, and certainly, you know, trying to implement the mobility plan makes sense. I think we are way, way behind the curve on some of the goals, many of which I agree with. But I do think that in, you know, there is some merit to trying to be a little bit more granular and assessing in certain communities what the impacts are going to be of it. Mm-hmm. And getting the community input too. And that's, you know, from stakeholders, from businesses, from residents, from people who actually are using those spaces, bicyclists and pedestrians and, you know, even folks who are in their vehicles. Mm-hmm. Should have a say in that.
So when we talk about getting community input, one thing that's been, I think, controversial in sort of greater CD 11 is the role of the neighborhood councils in delivering the input, probably more around homelessness and housing than transportation, except for the hot button road diets. What do you see that role as far as getting, how is the neighborhood council, I was a plum chair for MVCC, and sometimes it felt like there were so many rules on what we could and couldn't say that we, you know, were expected to be a rubber stamp, and when we weren't, it was, oh my goodness, what are they doing? Versus people that think that the neighborhood council should be almost a veto.
Yeah.
Like, what do you see the role as?
Well, under the city charter, the neighborhood councils are intended to serve in an advisory capacity to the council member. And in my view and in my experience, our current council member has not really engaged much with his neighborhood councils, and a lot of their recommendations and motions and things that they're bringing forward appear to be going into a black hole at City Hall. I think that our neighborhood councils are a really important part of our local democracy. They are made up of people who are subject matter experts in their own neighborhoods and communities. They volunteer a lot of time and put a lot of work into serving in those roles. And I think I would be remiss in my obligation and my requirement under the city charter if I didn't consider their input. That doesn't mean that I am necessarily going to agree with them on every issue. And I've had a lot of chats with members of neighborhood councils all over the district, but I am here to hear them out and to take their input. So I think that is their role, is to have an opportunity to discuss issues like this that will impact their community in a significant way.
All right, well, we are at about the time, 15 to 20 minutes, that I sort of budgeted
for
this.
It was so quick, Damien.
It does go fast. Well, you know, it's because you're talking about something different. I think that you and Aaron end up having the same interviews over and over again, because, you know, the issues of housing and homelessness are obviously the big issues in this race.
Yeah.
If you had brought it up, you know, I certainly wouldn't have cut you off and like, no, but I wanted to stay away from that. So it's a different conversation, I think, than you guys have been having a lot of the time.
It is. And, you know, I want to close then by saying, you know, we have a tremendous opportunity in front of us here in Los Angeles to improve public transit, to make a shift to more sustainable approaches to mobility around our city. There are a lot of elements and aspects of it that I think are really important. Where we are focusing, particularly with public safety in mind, you know, the more robust crosswalks and speed calming measures and things like that, when those speed calming measures don't impede, you know, fire trucks and emergency vehicles, I think that there's a lot that we can do to make this city more sustainable and to really help people make that shift out of vehicles into other modes of transportation. I really welcome the opportunity to, you know, lead on these issues, and I am going to work with communities to understand individual concerns and impacts. There's a lot to be done, and I see it as opportunities to improve our city. You know, I travel to other places. I use a lot of public transportation, and, you know, whether it's on the East Coast or, you know, other parts of the world, I see things that are really well done, and it's a lifestyle approach in a lot of other places. And here in Los Angeles, we have a lot of room to catch up on some of that. And, you know, I see just great opportunities, and, you know, we all live in the same communities over here on the West Side. You see what I see, whether it's the greening of our streets, the planting of trees, making them safer for pedestrians, encouraging people to walk with the shade and the street furniture. There's just a lot to do, and it's going to be complex, but we're going to roll our sleeves up and we're going to make this city amazing.
All right, cool. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.